We continue our teams that will shape the draft series by looking at three teams in the top 10 that do not need a quarterback: the Arizona Cardinals, the LA Chargers, and the Atlanta Falcons. Robert Mays of the Athletic Football Show joins me to preview and review these three teams. The Falcons, how much is too much enthusiasm for this offense? Chargers, to trade down or take a special wide receiver prospect at the fifth overall spot? And how excited can you get about the Cardinals offense if they're able to come away with a transformative wide receiver? All that and more coming up. Let's get into it. It's Tuesday, April 2nd. I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Football Show. It is a hell of a day to talk ball, and joining me to do just that is Robert Mays of the Athletic Football Show. Robert, what's going on, buddy?
I'm happy to be here. It feels like it's a long time coming. I'm excited that we finally get to do this.
I know, yeah. You had me on your show like a couple years ago or something. And yeah, I have not had you on this show. So I've been trying to widen our scope here. You know, get us out of our little bubble, the fantasy bubble, especially as we're heading into the draft and like really dive deep on some of these teams. So I appreciate you making the time. I respect the hell out of you, by the way, that when I sent you the doc of like, hey, these are the episodes I'm looking to fill, these are the teams like for our teams that will shape the draft series, anything is up. You know, you could take anything you want. And the first thing you did was not take the Chicago Bears. I just want to let you know I respect the hell out of you for doing that.
If you've ever listened to our show, I try to avoid talking about them as much as possible because it's just a no-win situation. If I'm overly optimistic, then I'm a homer. If I'm overly pessimistic, then I'm the wet blanket that consistently is more down on the Bears' outlook than I probably should be. So I just avoid it because there are so many emotional entanglements that it just never becomes worth it.
To be honest, with Andy Behrens, you know, doing the show with me during the season for at least one episode a week, we probably get enough like Bears emotions as it is. So, and hey, Andy Behrens, by the way, shout out to Andy. I don't know if you guys saw it. Check his Twitter feed. He was literally in the background of like a Caitlin Clark shot at the Iowa basketball game last night. So Andy might be on his private jet returning to Chicago as we speak. I mean, that is just a hell of a life for Andy Behrens. But like I said, we have a hell of a show here today because we are continuing our teams that will shape the draft series. Today we are looking at teams in the top 10 that are definitely not looking for a quarterback. I've identified three teams here that fit into this. We got the Arizona Cardinals, we got the LA Chargers, and we have the Atlanta Falcons with newly minted Kirk Cousins. So three very different teams to talk about here, Robert. You know, with a top 10 that just, like, there are some teams, I feel like there's going to be some wild trades, obviously, for quarterbacks this year, which is going to have a direct impact on these three teams. We could see some trade downs. We could see these teams not picking the top 10 by the time we get to the draft. The world is very much like the oyster for these three teams here.
They absolutely is. And I think that, you know, the Cardinals and the Chargers both have been popular teams to trade down, depending on how the draft falls. Obviously, the rumbles about quarterbacks going 1, 2, 3, and 4 makes that Cardinals pick pretty valuable if a team like Minnesota has to come up earlier in the process. I remember at the combine, one of the just the consistent things that was parroted over those 3 or 4 days was, yeah, the Chargers want to move down. I don't know if that changes in a post Keenan Allen world where they need a receiver. Is there going to be a partner for them to trade down with if the quarterbacks go 1, 2, 3, 4? But I think all three of these teams, their decisions are ultimately going to shape how the top half of the draft goes in a lot of different ways.
Let's start with the team that's picking first there, the Arizona Cardinals. We know that this is a team we can kind of expect anything from after we saw them trade down and then trade back up in last year's draft. So they're an exceptionally fun team to talk about right now, not just because of that, Robert, but also because, to me, when I think about the central offseason theme for this team, we're in year two of a rebuild with plenty of resources to stack this roster. And honestly, like, I'm just going to ask you, when you look at this roster on paper, is there anywhere they don't need like at least one or two more bodies along a position group?
No, I would say offensive tackle, maybe the one spot where you get chased off of that high in the first round because they gave Jonah Williams a multi-year starting level contract as a tackle. That's really the only spot after drafting Paris Johnson in the top 10 last year and giving Jonah Williams that contract. You could make an argument that they need less defensive tackle help just because of what they did in free agency. They signed Bilal Nichols, they signed Justin Jones. Both of those deals were multi-year deals that had guaranteed money into the second season. So that would really be the only other spot where they've spent significant resources. But any other room on the roster, maybe safety, because Buda Baker and Jalen Thompson are guys they've committed to. Maybe if those two are in your long-term plans. But it's hard to find many spots where they have definite answers and they don't need more help.
Right. Like tight end, obviously, like Trey McBride looks like a breakout guy, but the rest of the pass catching group is one of the most needy rooms in the entire NFL. When we're strictly talking about WR wide receivers, I mean, running back like James Conner is a guy that's given him some nice seasons, but can you rely on him to stay healthy? Do you want, like, I could see them taking it back on day two, day three, just to sort of beef up that room a little bit. Like, this is a group that really, I don't know. What do you think about the way this team was coached last year, what they did on offense? Because I'll tell you, when I watched them like on film, especially working on like Marquise Brown, I didn't really love the way they deployed him as like kind of their true X receiver. But I love the route combinations that they had him running. I love the way he worked within the structure of that offense. Just I don't think that player was right for it. So like when I watch this team on film, when I think about the way they were coached, I kind of like what I saw. But I don't know if that's just me being like a little bit of a football hipster here.
I don't think so at all. I think Drew Petzing, their first year offensive coordinator, I think did a really good job. And Drew has an interesting background. He's been in a lot of different offensive systems, obviously worked closely with Kevin Stefanski when they were in Cleveland together. So I think the bones of the offense resemble some of the stuff that they did with the Browns. But you know, he's worked for Norv Turner. He's worked in the Find West Coast offenses. He's worked in RPO offenses. So I think they have an offensive coordinator, an offensive system that can really go a bunch of different directions depending on what the talent ends up looking like. And that's still a question mark. We still don't know how they want to build the passing game specifically, just because they didn't have a lot to work with last year. Part of the reason I think Marquise Brown was in that role is because they had no one else to fill that
who
role.
Else gonna
I mean,
do
they
it?
Just they just didn't have anybody to put in that traditional kind of outside the numbers, you're on the line of scrimmage, you're the dude sort of spot within this offense. And there is a chance, based on how the top 10 of this draft goes, that that will change here very soon.
Right. And I think let's just go into the fourth overall pick there, because, you know, popular pick is obviously Marvin Harrison there. I think we're going to see quarterbacks one way or another, whether it's those teams stick and pick 1, 2, 3. I think the first two are definitely sticking. It's New England at 3, obviously, whether they're at the pick, whether they trade out, quarterbacks most likely going 1, 2, 3. That is going to leave Arizona with the situation where they're looking at Marvin Harrison. They're looking at any of these other players, but I definitely think they're going to get offers to trade down. So if you, Robert Mays, you know, let's buzz your hair off there, even though you got a great head of hair. I don't want to do that. Let's completely shave your head off. You're Monty Austin for it. You're working the phones. Like I said, we saw him last year make a bunch of moves, you know, up and down on the draft board. Would you stick and pick at 4, or would you rather trade down? Because this roster looks so primed to just drop a top X receiver prospect like a Marvin Harrison right into that
room. It does, but I also think they need more help. They need so many players that I think you can make an argument that if you move back a little bit, you can collect more picks and then potentially move back up again the same way they did last year. If that's an option, that's the option that's most intriguing to me. So here's the hypothetical that I would throw out to you. Okay.
Okay.
Let's say Minnesota does not go into the top three. The top three teams stick and pick quarterbacks. Minnesota desperately wants a guy. They're worried about J.J. McCarthy going 6 to the Giants. They say, we're going up. This is our year. This is our time. We're doing this. So you trade back with Minnesota and you get 11, 23, and next year's first to go along with the 27th overall pick, which you already have from Houston last year in the trade down. Then top half of the top 10 plays out. Marvin Harrison ends up going 5 to the Chargers or some other team. But then after that, you get one more receiver, and then there's still a guy left on the board at 7 or 8. So can you go then from 11 and trade 11 and number 66, your third round pick, to go back up to number 7 or number 8 and get the third receiver if you don't think that there's a huge gap between Harrison and those other two guys? That to me is the fantasy football, I'm just having a good time, scenario here. But when you consider their history, when you consider the fact that some teams don't view a huge gap between Harrison and the other guys, so if you can pick up an extra, you know, whatever it is, an extra first and even change, and you only have to spend a third to go back up to get that guy, that to me is my favorite possible outcome for them here.
How much have you watched of these top three receivers specifically, and how do you view it, like, personally? Not we know they're how some teams feel. Do you view it personally like there is a tier of 1, 2, 3 or like a big gap between these three prospects?
So I have not watched Harrison that much yet. I watched the other two guys because we did our quarterback show last week. So I was talking about Penix. I was talking about Jaden Daniels. So I've actually watched more of Odunze and Nabers than I have Harrison. Mm-hmm. But specifically, I think that there are teams that don't view that big of a gap. And I think the Cardinals may potentially be one of those teams. So if that's the case, then this seems to be the soundest way to approach it if you want to come away with one of the receivers from this spot.
Well, I'll tell you what I think here. I also don't view it as that big of a gap between those top three players. And I love Marvin Harrison. Like I said, you could take him and like drop him on that offense and I can see it perfectly. But I could also see that with Rome Odunze, especially if we're talking about like we want someone to play the role that Marquise Brown was playing last year, which was on the line of scrimmage, not a lot of pre-snap motion, run a lot of digs and posts and like curl routes and stuff like that, you know, and threaten the defense vertically at times. Yeah, Marvin Harrison could do that. Rome Odunze could do that as well. Like he's that classic consummate X receiver on the line of scrimmage. So for everything we're saying about, yeah, you stick at four and you're able to drop a guy that I think is the best prospect of the last 4 years at the wide receiver position, at least in Marvin Harrison, you could do that. But you could get a guy that I don't have like graded or ranked that far down in Rome Odunze by you coming up a few more picks and doing it there, man. And like you paint out that scenario, then you've got a prospect that's pretty close, or at least in shouting distance of Marvin Harrison. In any other year, might just be wide receiver one, no question about it. And you get all those extra picks. I mean, that is a very possible and plausible scenario for Arizona.
I think it absolutely is. Again, given their history and what they did last year, it's not out of character for them to think about it this way. And the couple teams we're going to talk about here, to me, are in such an interesting situation that we don't see that often. These are teams that are nominally rebuilding in a lot of ways. They need picks. They don't have a lot of talent on the roster, but they have a top of market quarterback. Mm-hmm. So how you go about this process when your quarterback is making $50 million against the cap, it's not like teams that are drafting a quarterback and are in rebuilding mode and can just spend in free agency because they have all this financial flexibility. So a team like Arizona, I think it would behoove them to try to get as many cost control pieces as they can to offset what they're paying Kyler Murray over the next few years. And it's not terrible. You know, it's a $43 million hit this year, 49 this year, 45 next year, 55 in 2026. And as the cap grows, they'll be able to absorb that. But if you can make sure that you're trying to find premium position players on cost control deals, if you're at 23 and 27 this year and you can get a receiver at 7 or 8, that means you have a left tackle in Paris Johnson, a number one receiver, and potentially a corner and an edge rusher from this year's first round that are all going to be on cost controlled contracts through the entirety of Kyler Murray's deal. So I think thinking about it and conceiving of it that way for this specific team makes a lot of sense, even if they already have a bunch of picks.
And just from the offensive perspective, like you suddenly start to look at that depth chart and you drop an Odunze. Let's just even say it's Rome Odunze because they've traded down in this scenario. Like now I suddenly feel like this is an offense I can win with, because this is a group that has a quarterback. And I want to have like a Kyler Murray conversation here in just a second. But it's a quarterback that this team seems to believe in and has shown us extremely high flashes in his NFL career. You've got an X receiver that I love. It's funny, like some people compare Rome Odunze to DeAndre Hopkins, which is, we've seen Kyler Murray have success with DeAndre Hopkins. I think he's more Davante Adams than DeAndre Hopkins, but that's just me. But either way, like this is a guy that's going to win 50-50 balls, and like Kyler Murray's an aggressive passer. You can see the symmetry there. I like Michael Wilson potentially as a number two receiver. I liked a lot of what I saw from him last year. I mentioned Trey McBride. Like, he can be your nominal number two in this offense, even if he has TE next to his name. The tackle duo. You got Paris Johnson at least locked in there. Like, now I suddenly start to feel like this is an offense that I can go to work with. I don't know about the defensive side. That's probably not as easy of a quick fix there. But I definitely think that on offense, like, you come away from this draft, like, not just restacking the resources, but also come in thinking like we can make a little bit of noise this year.
Yeah. And even the guards, they need new guards. Yeah. You're looking at Will Hernandez and Elijah Wilkinson and Yelta Froholt, who's their center. You know, this is a guy who is a back of the roster guy in Cleveland, and he played well last year. He acquitted himself well in that role, but the bar is not that high. When we're talking about playable pieces from that Arizona Cardinals team last year, it's more feel good stories. It's not guys that are going to prevent you from upgrading or from trying to add to those position groups. So I think that even if they were to add a receiver, an edge, and a corner in the first round, all the things they need. They still would need to use some of those mid-round picks on interior offensive line help, defensive line depth. I mean, there's just so many things that they need all across the roster that the more bites at the apple that they can stack up here, I think the better.
And it's not even necessarily like they are bereft of picks beyond the two first rounders. Like, they have a second round pick, their own second round pick, 35 overall. They have three picks in the third round, their own pick, one from the Titans and one from the Texans, and they have 104th overall in the fourth round. Like, so they have resources to suddenly come out of this draft, especially if they add more draft picks, more bites at the apple, maybe even just more options to go up and down, like up and down the draft board if they see someone specific that they want to target. This is a team that, like, they're in a very unique situation that you mentioned. Like, they have a franchise quarterback that they're tied to. There's a lot of good vibes around the coaching staff. There's a lot of just kind of good vibes around the building, which maybe people didn't feel that way 365 days ago. But I think people that watch the Cardinals have kind of come around, specifically on Jonathan Gannon and just the way that group was prepared and the way the offense was designed. And I even think sometimes the defense looked like it had the bones of something to build on there as well. I just think the Cardinals are going to, tell me if I'm crazy about this, but I feel like the Cardinals are going to kind of come out of the NFL draft being like every, look at me, I'm the smartest guy in the rooms, like kind of favorite team from this this coming season.
I wouldn't be surprised by that at all. And if you're looking at the path that you want to follow when you're a team at this stage, the Lions have given it to us. They did it. If you're starting from square one, and the Lions are even applicable here because they had an expensive quarterback as part of that. Not as expensive as Kyler Murray, but not a guy on a rookie contract, not a guy making peanuts. So what did the Lions do in year one? They were competitive and terrible. And that's what matters. As long as you're showing some fight and we can have some of those feel-good vibes about the staff and where you're headed, that season is a win. That's exactly what Arizona was last year. And then in year two, the Lions add some pieces and we finally start to see what the vision is. By the end of the year, they're a team that you could talk yourself into them. Yeah, if they had made the playoffs, I think they could have actually like given somebody a run. Like, that's where they were by the end of that season. I think that's rich for this Cardinals team this year. But if you can be a 6-11 sort of team, show real progress, and then into year three, into 2025, it's like, all right, if we add a piece here and a piece there, and we get some growth from all of these picks that we've made, can we fight to be a wild card team? I don't think that that is off the table whatsoever. And I actually think based on last year, they actually are very well positioned to try to follow that Lions blueprint here over the next couple seasons.
Yeah, Lions blueprint is really good. We're just asking for like not embarrassing in year two of this regime. Like that's really the bar here. And they can win six games, not be embarrassing. And then everybody that likes the Cardinals is like, hey, see, I told you that went better than most people probably expected. So that's kind of what my sort of vision for this team. I think the Lions blueprint is a really good one to throw out there. I want to ask you about Kyler Murray specifically. You mentioned like he's on a big extension. He's $46 million per year. It's funny how these quarterback contracts, like, we see the outrage for it. It's like, oh my God, he signs it. And then in a couple of years, like, okay, well, whatever. Now Joe Burrow's making $55 million a year. Who cares? Jalen Hurts is making over $50 million a year or whatever. Who cares? What Kyler Murray's making, 46. That's fine. Some of these guys are going to sign their extensions. It's going to look like paltry little money, $46 million a year. But from what you saw specifically at the end of the year, like, where's your kind of compass on where Kyler Murray goes from here as the franchise quarterback of the Arizona Cardinals?
I think he's one of those guys that's close to the line of, if you're better than Kyler Murray, you stick with the quarterback you have. If you're worse than Kyler Murray, there's always part of you that's thinking about whether you have to upgrade. I think that they came to a reasonable conclusion in that we're not going to be able to get a better option than Kyler when you consider the opportunity cost of what we can do with these other picks. If we can trade down, if we can find a receiver, if we can find a pass rusher with that pick instead of having to chase a quarterback, that in totality, Kyler plus the pieces we can add, is better than starting over a quarterback. I completely understand that. And I think the contract is part of it. I mean, he's the sixth highest paid quarterback in the league right now by AAV. That's going to change as these guys keep getting extensions. Dak is going to get paid. Trevor Lawrence potentially is going to get paid. So that's going to go down to eighth, ninth. And that's right. That's about probably where he should get paid relative to the market. And even if you look at the big cap that's coming in 2026, it's $55 million. If they were to restructure that thing and push out those cap hits into 27 and 28, they could easily ride that wave and still stay flexible and competitive in how they could add pieces throughout the entirety of this deal. So I think sticking with him and using last year's kind of a feeling out process in the way that they wanted to, it makes perfect sense. And I totally understand coming to this conclusion on the other side.
I wonder what they'd need to see from him on the field to feel good about, like, hey, we're going to restructure. We're going to kind of push this thing down the road. We're going to continue to commit to him. Because I've heard you say this, that they were really happy with what they, and I've heard this as well, really happy with what they got from him just off the field, like preparation wise and buy in and stuff like that, which I think is key when we're talking about this player specifically. That's been kind of like a discussion point with him throughout his career. Because on the field, man, like, I don't know how much I'm willing to take away from last year just because he was clearly coming back from a major injury. I thought he ran and scrambled more than I kind of anticipated and still showed like, oh, he's got that club in his bag. Some of the passing was a little mixed, but at the same time, not a great series of weapons. Marquise Brown, specifically the best guy on the roster at wide receiver, like they never overlapped in terms of their healthy games. So I don't really know what to take from that, because I think about Kyler Murray and like by the end of the Cliff Kingsbury experience, it's like, all right, I'm ready to see him in any other offense. Like it just enough already with the horizontal raid. Like let's see him in a real NFL offense that pushes the ball vertically, uses concepts that's more in line with the meta of today's game. And I kind of feel like that's what Drew Petzing's offense could be.
I totally agree. And I think that, yeah, I mean, you'd want to see a little bit more. But again, relative to the other contracts at the position, I think it's more than reasonable. And I think they figured out how to get the most out of him. You know, challenging him is an important part of the process. I think they learned that somewhere along the way. And I think it's not about painting him as somebody that's disengaged. I think it's about understanding how to engage him.
Right.
And I think that they really learned what that should look like over the course of last season. And based on everything I've heard from everyone I've talked to in that building, they are extremely happy with how last year went. And they really didn't have many reservations about moving forward with him as their quarterback of the future.
Anything else on the Cardinals that kind of sticks out to you? Because I think like the way we profile this team, they're definitely going to be a controlling figure in the draft. And like I said at the top, like I feel like the world is a little bit just their oyster right now.
I think I feel the exact same way. I mean, every single premium position they could add somebody to. You know, they need another corner even after signing Sean Murphy Bunting. They need another edge even after drafting B.J. Ojulari in the second round last year. Zaven Collins and Dennis Gardeck are both free agents after this season. So if they wanted to try to chase an edge with their second first round pick, that'd be totally reasonable. There's just so many different directions they can go because there are so few guys on the roster that are preventing you from adding pieces at really any position room on the entire team.
Man, I tell you what, very least from this Cardinals conversation, you've got my wheels spinning about like the trade backup for Roma Dunze. And that just makes a lot of sense to me. That just clicks so well in my brain, especially when you look at some of these danger teams like, ooh, Malik Nabers lands with the Giants or Roma Dunze with the Cardinals. Like, I think from a dynasty draft perspective, I kind of know which one I prefer there. So you've got my gears turning on that on the very least. Let's move to the next team and let's talk about the Chargers. Another team in a very similar situation, although it's year one of that particular regime, which I can't wait to dive into just what you think of the whole Jim Harbaugh experience. But they, on the other hand, feel like whatever we said about Kyler Murray with like a level of skepticism outside of like a handful of internet weirdos, there's really no like Justin Herbert skeptics. So that's a very exciting position for a team that's picking fifth overall.
It absolutely is, but they're in a really similar spot. This is just not something we see very often where this team is pretty much in full rebuild mode, or at least they should be. I guess that's what I would say. If you look at the state of the roster, they have a very, very long way to go. I mean, you can make an argument that in 2025, this team is essentially Justin Herbert, 29-year-old Derwin James, Rashawn Slater, Zion Johnson, Tui Tuipulotu, and like Alohi Gilman. And those are their players. Everybody else on the roster is dispensable or getting older. Khalil Mack is not under contract next year. Joey Bosa has a $36 million cap hit next year at age 30 after taking a pay cut this year. So they are really starting over in a lot of ways. And that leaves them as another one of these teams that's kind of a blank slate with only a quarterback to work with picking in the top five of this draft.
Man, and that's why I just can't... I'm not alone in thinking this, but I just can't get out of my head that they've got to trade out of this fifth pick, man. Because, and look, I get it. every fantasy dork out there, every just, I mean, maybe just appreciator of good football, honestly, like wants to see one of these receivers land with Justin Herbert. I don't know if Jim Harbaugh is one of those people. You know, we can debate that. I don't know if he's one of the people that wants to see Justin Herbert with a great receiver here at the fifth overall pick when there's going to be plenty of tackles available as well. Offensive line in a trade down situation. But yeah, I think what people, because talk about getting emotionally burnt up at the very top with the Bears, Robert, we have all been there with the Chargers, right? Where we thought this roster was something that it wasn't. Now I think like anybody looking at it with a level head, it's just like, this is a disaster. I mean, or close to a disaster of a roster, at least very much like needs to be completely restocked with talent.
Yeah, there's no doubt. I was sitting there at the owners' meetings last week while Jim Harbaugh was doing his soliloquy on offensive line play and the value of offensive line building and how it's the only position group in the entire NFL or in football in general that relies on no one else to be successful. And that sounded like a man who understood the importance of building through the offensive line as a means of building your offense. My question is with the trade down thing, and I'm curious what you think about this. Who's coming up?
Mm-hmm.
Who's coming up to five for Marvin Harrison? If the four quarterbacks go and the prize is Marvin Harrison, if that's what you really want out of this trade up, who's coming up and where are they coming from? Because I don't think that there's a natural link between a lot of the teams, let's say, picking 6 through 15 and a desire to come up for Marvin Harrison.
It's a great point. Maybe the Jets, just because they're so all in right now, like, and they could certainly use another receiver.
I fully support that because I want them to do as much irresponsible, unhinged stuff as possible over the course of this entire offseason.
Why not?
That totally tracks. I think that's probably the best answer. The one that I keep coming back to, and we've been banging the drum about this on our show, it will never happen. They'll never do this. It's totally out of character for them. But the idea of the Jags going from 17 and trading a future first round pick to go into the top 10 and get one of those receivers and understand that their feet are against the fire, this is time. That's the one that I would really want to see, but I would be surprised if it happened. But a lot of those other teams in that range, they just don't have the ammo or the need to go up for one of those guys. So that's my only question about them trading down is who would it be with and what would it be for?
I think if they are become a trade down team, then the Cardinals have stuck at four and just took Harrison. I think we're kind of living in two separate realities here where like definitely I think if McCarthy is still on the board or you know, McCarthy even goes ahead of Jaden, any of that type of stuff, then I think there's a chance that they can sell that pick off for the fourth quarterback and like they're ready to rock. But yeah, in a scenario where McCarthy or Daniels or whatever has gone 3-4, that is tough because I'm with you. Like Indianapolis definitely, I think, could use, I love Michael Pittman. I'm a big Michael Pittman guy, but I think they could use a different X receiver than Alec Pierce. And I love Josh Downs. Like, I think that'd be awesome,
0%
but no chance, right? Like it literally 0% chance that that's going to happen. Right. Like even New Orleans is a 14. They don't have any damn picks. Like, I mean,
they have no picks. The Broncos have no picks. The Raiders
two max
have
out credit cards right there at pick 12 and pick 14. No chance.
The Raiders have nothing but wide receivers. It's the only thing on the only position group on their team that's totally set. So every single team picking outside the top 10 and even Chicago, right? Chicago is the team that I think at the beginning of this process, people were saying, all right, we know where this team is. They have a real need at that position. Would they be willing to go from 9 to 5 to make sure they get one of these guys? Well, now they have Keenan Allen and they have no picks. So I think that there are so few teams in that general range that would be willing to make a move up like that. I don't know what the market for the number 5 overall pick is going to look like if the quarterbacks are gone.
Yeah, a part of me can't erase the image and the idea and the concept of my head because it seems so like smooth and clean when you're doing a mock draft light right now. It's just Harrison to the Cardinals, somebody that's to the Chargers or the Giants, and like then you're good with receivers. Like it maps very well with the strength of this draft and the teams that are up there that need receivers. But with such a all the talk that this is a great class, that there's not this big gap between these players, I do kind of wonder if a team that we're not thinking about pulls off like a Julio Jones style trade. Like, what about the Bills?
What about I was about to say. It's very annoying. I was about to say, are we going to see a Julio Jones trade? Is it going to be the Bills? Those are the two things I was about to say. I love that so much. That one weird team that's lingering out there because they think that these guys are true difference makers in the way that a Julio was in that draft. That would be easily the most fun scenario, and it's the one I'm actively rooting for.
I would also throw the Bengals into this scenario too. They pick at 18th. They're much higher. Like, I wonder if they think to themselves, like, T. Higgins is gone after this year. Like, I think there's almost like, talk about 0% chance. I think we're close to like a 0% chance that T. Higgins is on this team in 2025. And these are two teams. We're talking about the Bills and the Bengals with 10 plus picks. We're going to have the whole episode in 2 weeks of teams with 10 plus picks. So along with the Cardinals, who we just talked about, but like Bills, Bengals, they're on that list. They have ammo potentially, like not that they're like just loaded with second and thirds and stuff like that, but there may be some potential sweeteners there where they have draft capital this year. And I think with the Bengals, obviously the Bills' need is pretty clear. Even though I like a lot of the players in that room, everybody knows I'm a big Curtis Samuel guy. I like Khalil Shakir, and Stephon Diggs is still there. We all know that they could use like one alpha for the future. We know that. And I think the Bengals, again, like if you want to think, hey, we need to keep this band together, man. You know, T. Higgins is gone in a couple years. Shoot, even if you make this move up, you could then maybe trade him on draft night potentially because you've locked that in. Like, their whole identity and their whole like ethos on offense, Robert, a lot of the times when conceptually they can't figure things out, it's like, well, who gives a shit? We got better players than you. And like, they would be a team potentially to go up and get another one of these better players.
My only thing about this is does that seem in character for the Cincinnati Bengals?
I mean, no.
The Bengals do make draft trades, but the Bengals versions of draft trades are like moving up three spots for Cam Taylor Britt 2 years ago, or moving down four spots in the third round like they did last year. The idea of them going from 18 to the top 10 and paying the tax it would take to go do that, I just don't see them doing it. Buffalo, I think they've made some aggressive moves in the past. My only question about Buffalo, the only thing that would put this off the table for me is, are they now in kind of a more wait and see mode after the way that last season went? And some of their moves would lead you that direction when it comes to the lack of aggressiveness. They didn't restructure some of those contracts, whether it be Von Miller, Stephon Diggs, et cetera. So I think they're trying to set themselves up for maybe some more aggressiveness next year, the year after. But they're one of those teams that I think anything is on the table because they're in such a weird middle ground right now, just from an overall team building perspective.
Yeah, but this is not like an all, we talk about the Jets, like they're pushing the chips in for 1 year, but this is like, hey, you get a guy like this and think about, sure, whether it's Marvin Harrison at five or one of these other players, like, you know, Odunze or Neighbors or whatever. Obviously, him and Josh Allen, this player, are going to have a lot of success in 24. But imagine what they could do together in 25. Like, I could see Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott thinking about it this way. And I'll just say this, you know, we can get off the fan fiction. I mean, but even though that's what the pre-draft process is all about, it's all about fan fiction. The Bills fan base and like people that cover the Bills are so receiver thirsty. Robert, you would not believe how many like Bills fans consume my stuff or like hit me up to do shows because they want a receiver so bad, because they look at these draft charts of like, we haven't spent a second or like a day two pick on a receiver since Zay Jones, who's played for two teams since then. Like, they want a receiver so bad. They would this would, like, talk about fan fiction. This would be the ultimate like fan glory for those people in Buffalo.
That's fair. They traded a first round pick for Stephon Diggs. You can't play that game. Just
how do you think? How do you think they found me?
Pick on it. Just because you didn't pick, use your pick on it doesn't mean you haven't invested in the position over the last few years. So I understand the frustration, but what Stephon Diggs has given that team over the last couple seasons and what their receiver production was before that, I think that things have been okay from a pass catcher perspective in Buffalo. They also used a first round pick on Dalton Kincaid last year.
Right. Who's the whole like Dalton Kincaid receiver thing, that's not my favorite thing in the world, but I think he's going to be a good tight end. I think he's going to be a good tight end. I'll say that. But yeah, look, the Bills are definitely a fun team to think about in this scenario where someone's coming up to five, but let's live in the reality that you're painting here where no one comes up to five. No one comes up and they're just stuck at the fifth overall pick. I tend to think, Robert, that people are overreacting a little bit to the Jim Harbaugh, like, we're going to run the ball and like we want Justin Herbert throwing to goofball receivers, or, you know, Greg Roman, like, we're just going to run the piss out of the ball, this whole thing. I kind of tend to think people are overreacting to that. Am I underreacting to this? Like, what do you think this team envisions itself as an offense in 2024 and beyond?
I think they probably envision themselves as more of a run heavy, heavy personnel sort of team in the way that we've seen Jim Harbaugh and Greg Roman operate in the past. But it's not as if the Ravens didn't use high level draft picks on wide receivers when Greg Roman was their offensive coordinator. They drafted Rashad Bateman in the first round. Mm-hmm. If that happens, you still need players at those positions, even if nominally you're going to be a physical run first football team.
Marquise so Brown I wouldn't too be surprised. First round pick from them.
Yeah, Marquise Brown was also a first round pick. That's a great, yeah, another great example. So I think that they're in a position where they just need the best players. And if they think that Marvin Harrison is the best player, that's totally fine. If they think that drafting Joe Alt and having him, you know, play guard, or having Trey Pipkins play guard, or however they end up sorting that out, is best for the long term because Alt will slide in as a starter next season, then go that route. I just think that they need pieces, that they are starting from ground zero. And I just think that they need to add some sort of talent to this offense and to this roster, whether it be receiver, tackle, whatever. I wouldn't read too much into their history because I just don't think that that's going to be the most important influential factor here.
Yeah. And like, I think they could be a lot better as a heavy personnel team. Like, if you've watched the Chargers the last few years, their run game has been frustrating. Like, even when Austin mm-hmm. Eckler has been really productive, they were a frustrating run team for one reason or another. They've had like the worst group of tight ends, or the very unenjoyable group of tight ends, especially in the blocking department the last couple of seasons. So like it's almost like I said, it's become this weird. And like Jim Harbaugh's not coached a single game with the LA Chargers, and it's already become this like weird thing that's on fantasy Twitter's radar. And like, yeah, I don't know about this. Like, they're going to turn Justin Herbert into like a game manager or something like that. But like, I hear the vision from Harbaugh and even from Greg Roman a little bit. And like, I kind of see where this Chargers offense the last few years could have needed a little bit of that.
Yeah, I totally agree. I just think it's about building an offensive system and building a roster where you can run the ball when you have to. And I think that we've seen that change from a lot of teams over the last few years. That's the most important part to me, is are you building a roster and a scheme that's flexible? Even teams that we've painted as these spread it out, spread and shred, throw it around sort of offenses, the Chiefs, the Bills, those teams have pivoted stylistically mm-hmm. over the last couple of years. So I don't think there's any sort of disconnect between investing in the offensive line, building a strong running game, and then having a star quarterback. If you look at what Buffalo did last year, they signed Connor McDermott in free agency. They drafted Osiris Torrance in the second round, and they have Josh Allen. If you look at what the Chiefs did two offseasons ago, they drafted Creed Humphrey high in the second round. They drafted Trey Smith. They spent on offensive linemen. Like, there can be a world where your quarterback throws the ball 40 times a game and you put some sort of emphasis on being able to run the ball efficiently when the moment calls for it.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't see those two things as like in combat. I think they can live together. They should live together, honestly. Like, just think about the teams that have been bounced from the playoffs at times when they can't really run the ball like in that way. They can't get physical when the weather's, you know, all the typical football cliche stuff that we talk about.
Miami.
Miami. Exactly. Like, you don't want Justin Herbert on this like finesse offense that, yeah, in September he's throwing for, well, I mean, some people would want this, but he's throwing for 400 yards and he's dominating games and stuff like that. You want a team that's actually going to be able to go to the playoffs and not get crushed in the first round by the Jacksonville Jaguars in some historic comeback type of situation. Like, an identity shift is just so needed. And I do think, I mean, look, I don't watch a ton of college football. I don't watch like any college football during the season. The only time I watch college football is when I'm charting receivers for the draft. I don't know. I can't tell you I'm super familiar with Jim Harbaugh from Michigan or any of that stuff, but like, I feel pretty optimistic that his vision for this team is probably where it needs to go. And look, do we want Justin Herbert throwing to Josh Palmer and Quentin Johnston and Darius Davis? No. But Robert, like, even if they don't take a receiver at the fifth overall pick, they go offensive line, they could throw like two picks at it the rest of the mm-hmm. draft and come away with a very good room. Like, you get a Ricky Pearsall or something in the second round, I think that could be great. Or, you know, Ladd McConkey, if that's your thing, A.D. Mitchell in the second round, maybe, if he falls that far. Like, there's so much more they can do that I'm just kind of trying to prepare people that if they take a tackle fifth overall, don't immediately run to like the, oh, see, these guys, they don't know what they're doing type of thing.
I think this is about a multi-year outlook and understanding that you're not going to fill all these footholes and fix all these problems in 1 year. And even if right now you can look at the right tackle situation and be like, oh, they have Trey Pipkins, they paid him, they can move on from him next year. And he's not the type of player that's going to prevent you from spending a high pick on a tackle if you think that's the best player available and you think that's the best path forward. I'm of the opinion, and I've always been one of these guys over the last couple of years, I want the pass catchers. I just think that you need one or two of those guys to be a truly elite dominant offense in the NFL. Pretty much every single team we've seen go far in the playoffs or make noise that doesn't have Patrick Mahomes at quarterback typically has at least one, often two, high-level threats at their receiver spots. So I would, if it were all things being equal, I would typically take the elite receiver over the elite tackle. But you can also make an argument on the other side that it's harder to find the tackles. Yeah. It just is. If you look at where elite tackles in the NFL come from, you typically do not find those guys outside of the first round. There are exceptions here and there, but we've had far more superstar receivers come after the first 32 picks than we've had star tackles come after the first 32 picks. So if you think about it from a scarcity perspective, I think you could make a serious argument that it might be the best path forward for them in this spot specifically.
Yeah, the scarcity thing is what's stuck with me, man, because like the more receivers I watch from this class, and I don't know that there's an obvious like superstar that I see that's right now pegged as a day two player. I don't know if I'm necessarily there, but like there's a lot of Zay Flowers probably would have been like the receiver five in this class or something like that. Like JSN would have been no better than four. And like we're talking about guys that were clearly the best prospects in last year's draft class. And you get to the second day, there's plenty of guys that you could see being really good, productive players in this offense, even if they're not necessarily Marvin Harrison. And part of me, man, like I don't know if this is just like a fear thing, but I'm almost scared of the idea of like where, from a fantasy perspective, like where people are going to draft one of these rookie receivers like a Marvin Harrison if they land with Justin Herbert and the Chargers. Like, I mean, shoot, I know the sickos are already drafting on best ball sites. I could imagine like he's going to be a second round pick by the end of the draft if he goes fifth overall.
I have the third and fourth picks in our like half dynasty, half keeper draft in our rookie draft, and I'm almost happy that I do, just because I don't have to worry about it. You know, like I'm just going to take whoever falls to me at three and four.
Is it
I don't
one
have
quarterback?
To really make
just
any
one
hard
quarterback?
Decisions. It's one quarterback, so it's probably going to be, in some order, it'll be Harrison, Neighbors, Odunze, because there are no running backs really worth taking that high in this year's class. And then what I do at four will ultimately become the big question, whether that's a Bowers thing, whether it's one of the receivers landing somewhere where he has a path to the number one spot. I'm sure people are very interested in this, but from my perspective in fantasy, this is the number one thing that I'm worried about.
Well, hey, like I said, you're in a good spot there where you're just going to take that third guy and then you can have fun with the fourth pick. So yeah, I think there's definitely a drop off though to the rest of these receivers, in my opinion. Like I think I like Brian Thomas, but you know, he would have to land in a really special spot, which he probably will, to be honest, where he's kind of projected to go. I could see the Bills, not back to the damn Bills, but I could see the Bills maybe trading up for like that type of receiver or something like that. So that would definitely be worth the fourth overall pick in your dynasty rookie draft. But anything else on the Chargers beyond the fact, like I think we've hammered the Jim Harbaugh stuff. I think we've hammered the fact that this is a team that needs basically everything. Like we didn't even talk about the defense, and as much as like the receiver room's rough to look at, the personnel on the defensive side of the ball is beyond the fact that they kept the pass rushers, that's still a unit that needs a lot of help as well.
Yeah, they need help everywhere. Because the pass rushers, there's a chance that neither of those guys are on the roster as soon as next year. I understand wanting to be somewhat competitive next year. You don't want to purge the entire roster of talent. So you're trying to just build a team that you can actually win some games with in 2024 in year one of a new regime. But again, there's a chance they move on from both of those guys. So if there's an edge rusher high that you like, that shouldn't prevent you from taking one. Same as tackle. They need corners. I mean, the biggest move this team made at corner free agency was signing Christian Fulton to a $3.5 million deal. Like they're in a spot where they have so few building blocks for the future that to me, most things are on the table. I don't think a lot of people would conceive of the Chargers and the Cardinals being in similar places from a team building perspective, just because the way we've talked about the Chargers in recent years, Justin Herbert is there. But if you look at the rosters and you're actually honest with yourself, they're a lot more similar than you probably think at first glance.
Yeah. And they're two teams I can see myself getting excited about to some degree at the end of the draft based on what they do, especially from an offensive perspective. Like there's a low bar to clear here for me to get excited about your offense when Justin Herbert's your quarterback. And it's a system that I actually think does work in today's NFL in terms of like establishing a power run game and working off that from a passing game perspective. And I mean, shoot, throwing out a heavy personnel, like I'm all in on that, man. Like that, I think I'm excited about where they are. So depending on what these two first teams do, I think we come away feeling they're certainly going to impact the draft, and I feel pretty good about where they stand coming out of it. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back on the other side, we're going to talk about a team that I think stands out from these other two operations right after this. All right, we're back. Time to talk about the Atlanta Falcons, Robert. Very different, right, from what we just talked about, where this is a roster that I think it's not loaded, right? But it's got some really good quality young building block pieces. Don't feel that way about the Cardinals and Chargers necessarily, but they also have a quarterback. Well, the Falcons have a quarterback now too in Kirk Cousins. So my central theme for this team, well, we got the quarterback in the offensive system. Now what? So now what, Robert Mays?
I think it's about defense, and that's what everyone has been saying, and I tend to agree. You can make an argument that they might still need another receiver. You know, if you think that Darnell Mooney can play in the slot more often than he did in Chicago, if you think dropping another guy in there that's like a true difference maker with Mooney and Drake London just supercharges that offense for you, I could hear that argument, but I think that's hard to justify when you've spent top 10 picks on offensive skill position players in each of the last 3 years. So if that's the mindset, then I think you automatically shift to defense. And this team has been trying to find a pass rusher since John Abraham retired.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what it feels like. I was looking at the numbers today. They were 25th in pressure rate last year. They were 21st in sacks. Over the last 5 years, the Falcons have 138 sacks. For context, no other team in the league has less than 161. The Steelers had 252. So more than 100 delta between them and the Falcons in dead last at 32nd over the last five seasons. This team needs defensive line difference makers. And even if you like Arnold Ebiketie, he's a situational pass rusher. Grady Jarrett and David Onyemata are going to be 32 and 33 next year. So using that pick at 8 or trading back a little bit to find somebody that can affect the quarterback in that spot, I think it makes way too much sense.
Yeah, I mean, just talking about this with Field Yates on the previous podcast, where you've been mocking like edge rushers to the Falcons since we've been cashing checks doing this, buddy. I mean, before me, you mentioned Jonathan Abraham. Like, I mean, my God, like this has been a position of need, and they've tried, right? Like Vic Beasley had a moment. Someone pointed out when we were talking about this on Twitter, like, yeah, Adrian Claiborne had 9.5 sacks in a season once, but 6 of them or something came in one game against the Cowboys. Sorry, producer Colin.
Thanks to Chaz Green for that.
Yeah, shout out Chaz Green. I mean, they drafted Tack McKinley, right? Like they've taken their shots. They've just never had that guy. And they're in a position in this draft where they're going to have most likely I think they probably stick at 8. They could be a trade down team. I suppose like they could add more resources to this thing, but they stick at 8. Like they're going to have, at least the way it plays out in most mock draft scenarios, they're going to have the pick of the litter in terms of defensive players. This is probably our first like warning spot for defensive player comes off the board here.
Yeah, I agree. And if they want to have their pick of edge rusher, they probably will. Cause I don't see a team before them going that direction when you look at the makeup of those rosters. And we talked about if the Cardinals move down to 11 and then back up, where would one of those spots be? Could number 8 be one of those spots? But if you're Atlanta, are you worried about the Bears taking your pass rusher if that's the spot you actually want to come away with from the top 10? So I think that's a consideration you have to think about. The other thing I would say, and I know we keep doing the edge thing and that makes sense, but is there a world where they don't love the edges that might be available at 8? They do love the corners that are available in that general range. So let's say they did move back to 11 with Arizona if the Cardinals trade with the Vikings. Do they like the corners in that spot better? And if you could pick up some draft capital somewhere along the way, that's a better option. That's the only kind of devil's advocate counterexample that I would offer.
I think Raheem Morris is a really good coach. I also think he's kind of a hard coach to pin down because he's been in so many systems, he's been on so many staffs, he's done so much. So like normally I'd think like, okay, I'm just trying to envision like Raheem Morris defense is like, are we prioritizing the pass rush, are we prioritizing the corner? And it definitely comes down to individual player evaluations too, but I find that to be like a hard exercise. As high as I am on Raheem Morris and what he's going to bring to the table here, that's sort of like, I don't really know the answer to that. They might feel differently about the corner versus the edge rusher thing.
Well, the team was pretty much built in Los Angeles before he got there in terms of big acquisitions, but This is a team that spent multiple first round picks on Jalen Ramsey and then also had Aaron Donald. So there's really no place where it tips the scales one direction or another when you think about it from a team building perspective.
And as we've seen with the team that we just discussed, the previous head coach for the LA Chargers, it doesn't always map in terms of like, I think Brandon Staley was just an Aaron Donald, Jalen Ramsey merchant as a defensive coordinator. I don't totally buy into that necessarily, but like, it's just like, it's hard to take what went on in LA and apply it to somewhere else because like you have one of the best players to ever play the position in Aaron Donald and a very unique talent in Jalen Ramsey. So then you've got to kind of go back into the history of Raheem Morris teams. And again, like he's a guy that's been and done like been a lot of different places and done a lot of different things. So I don't know. I'm interested if they had their pick of like a corner or an edge rusher where they'd end up going there. But the edge rusher thing just feels so easy because of the sack numbers that you threw out there and just like the longstanding history of that position on this roster.
Either way, Raheem Morris is going to be well positioned to coach this defense because if they do pick an edge rusher, then they'll need another corner. And if they do pick a corner, they'll need another edge rusher. It's exactly the situation he was in last year where they had 297-pound Michael Hoke as an edge guy that was dropping half the time. They had one workable corner. So he's used to living this life no matter which direction they end up choosing.
Yeah. 97 on the Rams, man. That was always a funny one where it was like, what the hell's he doing out there in coverage? So yeah, he is in a position where we could be looking at a similar type of situation. Although I like a lot of what the Falcons defense did last year under Ryan Nielsen. So I wonder how much they'll maybe try to keep around from a system perspective, although it's two pretty different worlds if you think about it. So I don't know. I think that Raheem Morris is well positioned, like you said, to coach up a pretty good defense here. I do want to talk about the offense a little bit with you here, Robert, because I just did a video on YouTube like lining up kind of exactly Drake London's profile with what I think they're going to ask the number one receiver to do on this offense. And it just, like, it just so perfectly aligns. Kirk Cousins, it perfectly aligns. Like, it all fits together so well. Maybe I'm saying a lot about myself here in that, like, once again, I'm worried about how, are we going to go too far with this thing? Like, especially the Drake London stuff, right? Like, how high is too high for Drake London? How far, like, can the projections go for him? So I'm curious where, like, your optimism level is on this offense, just again, dropping Kirk Cousins on here, Zach Robinson, offense coordinator under Raheem Morris, because it's so easy to get so excited, man. And I'm trying to, as I grow up, be a more of a measured person.
Are you just imagining death by a thousand dig routes for Drake London?
Oh, hell yeah, offense? Dude.
Yeah.
I mean, Puka Nakua said to me at Super Bowl Radio Row, like, yeah, my favorite route is a dig route off a dagger, and I'm watching film on Drake London. I'm charting his routes. I'm like, that's what Drake London should be doing. And oh, here's a clip of him doing it really well. And actually, how it could have been better if Desmond Ridder like gets rid of the ball without like that little hesitation there. And you know who has the highest passer rating last year on deep in like in routes? It's Kirk Cousins. You know who had more yards and completions on in routes and deep crossing routes and middle crossing routes? Kirk Cousins in 2022. Like, it just all overlaps so well that I'm worried we're going to go too far with it, Robert.
I'm excited about it because I really enjoyed watching Kirk Cousins play football over the last couple of years. I think partially that's the skill position talent they had in Minnesota. I liked watching that offense. Two things I would say that maybe should temper your expectations. One, Kirk Cousins is 34 years old and coming off of a torn Achilles. Just worth mentioning every time we discuss him or the Falcons. He'll probably be fine, but just worth throwing out there. Two, we have no idea how good Zach Robinson is going to be at this. Mm-hmm. I have every reason to be bullish on it, but this is still a first-year offensive coordinator that we've never seen do this job. And it's very easy to say, we'll just keep plucking guys off of this tree and the line will keep going up forever, but that's not always how it's going to work. So there is a chance that it takes a little while for them to get comfortable with this entire system. It takes him a little while to find his footing. So those are the two things I would say to rein on this a little bit. But overall, I think that from day one, this is going to be an efficient, watchable offense at the very least.
Who was the last offensive coordinator candidate comes off a really good tree? Again, you have every reason to be very optimistic about how it's going to go. And then it goes really poorly. I'm trying to think of like who is the last guy that would fit into that archetype that we would, you know, have like concerns with.
Play caller from a very good offense that became or non-play caller from a very good offensive tree that became a play caller somewhere else and it went poorly.
Yeah.
Matt Nagy.
Shoot, yeah. I guess so. I mean, yeah. Andy Reid tree notwithstanding, I guess. Maybe from this particular like tree.
I think you could make an argument that what happened with the Jets and Mike LaFleur was disappointing. I think he would be the guy that's the closest to this family where it didn't work out. You mm-hmm. could easily make an argument that that's more of a Zach Wilson problem than it is a Mike LaFleur problem. The fact that he was out of work for like 20 minutes before McVay called him and sought him out to be his offensive coordinator, yeah. I think says a lot. But for the most part, I mean, guys from that world specifically, it's been a lot of hits. You know, even as we've gotten deeper and deeper onto the coaching staff, the guy like Bobby Slowick, who was the passing game coordinator for like 2 years and then gets his first shot and that ends up working out. For the most part, this has gone well when these guys have been given the opportunity. It's the bet that I would continue to make. And even if we've never seen Zach Robinson do it, I think there are a lot of reasons to believe that this is going to go pretty well.
Yeah, that's what I come back to, too, is like, Bobby Slowick, man. I mean, Bobby Slowick worked at PFF recently enough that they're like trying to claim him, you know, like, hey, that's one of
Zach Robinson, too.
And so did Zach. That's right. So did Zach Robinson. So it's just it's hard to not, again, it's really hard to not get over optimistic. The two things you said there are very well taken, right? It's the Kirk Cousins injury factor. Like, who's even the backup quarterback on this roster right now? Like, off the top of my head, I'd have to sit here and think about it. But, you know, probably somebody.
Taylor Heinicke.
Oh, yeah, right. It's Taylor Heinicke still. Yeah, he's still around. By the way, I just wrote a piece called, you know, every team that needs quarterback help and how much quarterback help they need last week. And I wrote, yeah, they got Taylor Heinicke around. So you can see where my brain's at. I'm firing
it's
on all
point the calendar.
Yeah, I'm firing on all cylinders here during draft season. There's no doubt about it. Well, you want me to know how many dig routes Keon Coleman ran, though? I could probably tell you that, but not with backup quarterback. So, yeah, Taylor Heinicke, even in this offense, I actually could see that being. I could see that being okay if we got to go a couple of weeks. Kirk Cousins has a little flare up, something like that. So I don't know, man. I just think about by the time we get to August and every fantasy analyst and every smart football analyst has told you how great this is for Drake London, including me and probably yourself too, Robert. I can see a scenario where we get over our skis with this. But at the same time, man, it just all maps so perfectly together. It maps perfectly for the other players beyond Drake London, too. Kyle Pitts, Bijan Robinson. Like, I can just see this working out so easily. That, again, when you think about Atlanta in the draft, that's what makes them an exciting proposition here at eighth overall as well, is that they're really positioned to go, and a lot of this stuff can work well together. That, hey, at the eighth overall pick and these other spots, too, there's a lot of promise at the end of these picks.
There's no doubt. And I think from a fantasy perspective, I mean, the top end of the wide receiver market, it fell out a little bit last year. You know, there are guys that were drafted to be those true number one, Devontae Adams, Stephon Diggs down the back half of the year. Jamar Chase was banged up. I mean, the guys that were drafted wide receiver 10, 11, 12 last year, guys like Chris Olave, Devontae Smith, there was a lot of disappointment. So I think that you're going to be looking for guys coming into this season to be a little bit more excited about. And Drake London is going to have a very good argument for why he should be one of those guys that can truly tip the scales for you this year when you consider all of the circumstantial things that have changed in Atlanta.
Yeah, and the fact that he stands alone on that receiver depth chart, like, I'm with you. I think they kind of need another receiver. Like, Darnell Mooney is fine. I think he's probably a three, though. Rondale Moore is not a wide receiver. Like, he's a fake receiver to me. So I think they could use one more body at that position. But if they don't, I know there are some scenarios where, hey, they could take one here at eighth. I think that's a little rich. I do think they need... I think they need some real defensive difference makers, but even if they come away with a receiver on, you know, round two, round three, something like that, like, London does really stand alone on this depth chart. So he stands out on some of these disappointing players from last year that were the number two, 1B, whatever you want to call it, receivers on their own teams, right? Where like Devontae Smith and like Jalen Waddle, these guys that disappointed. Mm-hmm. That was a big talking point throughout all last year. And London's just got an immediate path, an easy like moonwalk path to 130 targets here in this particular passing game.
It feels like more, yeah. Right? If they're going to throw the ball as often as I anticipate them throwing the ball because of what they spent on the quarterback and because of the history, I mean, they ran the ball a lot in Los Angeles last year. And when I say they ran the ball efficiently in Los Angeles, yeah, last year. I mean, when Zach Robinson was there, the makeup of that offense is we're going to get in the shotgun and we're going to run 7-step dropbacks and throw this thing around. And I don't think that Kirk Cousins is built like Matthew Stafford to necessarily play that way. But I think that there is a version of this team that still throws the ball a lot more than what we saw from the Falcons over the last couple of years, and is in the top, you know, 8 to 10 in terms of neutral situation pass rate all throughout the entire league.
Yeah, this is not like a perfect player comparison, although they're both X receivers. But like, and hey, one of these guys had a lot more of a following or like more credit on his resume coming into last season than I mean, well, Drake London has more than this player did. Like, why can't Drake London do what Nico Collins did last year? 80 catches, sure. 1,200 yards, 8 touchdowns, just shy of 1,300 yards, actually 1,297. So like, he could easily do that. Like, and I think, again, I think that's a very realistic projection. I think some people might be like, that's kind of disappointing for the Drake London expectations. That's just where I'm, that's where I'm like, okay, let's try to keep a level head here about this whole thing. Cause I'm with you. Like, I do think they're going to throw the ball a lot. And like, Nico had 109 targets last year. I don't think that like that's happening. I think Drake London's going to have more than that, but yeah, we're definitely counting on Kirk Cousins to be quite efficient to do this whole thing here.
Yeah, I have faith in his ability to do that. Where your ceiling exists from a football perspective with this model and this version of building your team, I think that's up for debate, but that's a conversation that we can have at a very different time.
Yeah, absolutely. So it does sound like we are very optimistic about the Falcons, and we probably should be. Any other parting shots on them as a team? They very much feel different than the first two teams we talked about, but similar where we can come out of they're already existing in a very optimistic area right now. And I feel like the draft could just kind of hammer that home one degree further.
I'll be curious to see again where their ceiling ends up. You know, obviously, they, by doing what they did with Kirk Cousins and the pieces they already have on the roster, they're positioned to compete for and potentially win the NFC South. What happens beyond that? I think that's up for discussion. I mean, it's the constant kind of existential question you have to ask yourself when you are paying market rate for a quarterback that is not, quote unquote, an elite guy. You know, and we can argue about what the number on that looks like. The phrase that I continue to use is, does he have a seat at the table, right? If it's a round table where the elite guys get to sit, does Kirk Cousins have a seat at the table? I would argue no. So if you're paying $40 million, $45 million a year for the 11th or 12th best quarterback in the league, if you want to be optimistic, you can say eighth. Where does that leave you as a team? How many other things need to go right for that path to take you where you want to go, for you to be an actual Super Bowl contender? You can get there. We've seen teams get there in the past, but I think that is kind of the big picture question and the big picture conversation that looms over the Falcons as currently constructed.
I feel pretty good about it. I feel pretty good about their ability to get those other things right. Just because there's existing talent on the roster, whether it's London or Robinson or Pitts, when Pitts is healthy, not the version of Pitts we got last year, but if he's a healthier player. And this is a team that's invested in the offensive line. I feel pretty, personally feel pretty good, even though I'm trying to, again, be an adult here, grow up, have some measured expectations about things, not take things too far. I generally am with you that I feel pretty good about where this team can go this year, because I think those other things can go along with Cousins and the addition of Robinson as the play caller.
I also think that if you look at the state of the NFC, you could talk yourself into the path. There aren't that many teams you're like, yeah, we're really, really scared of what that team is going to be come January. Obviously, the Niners still have a ton of talent. They're going to be there. The Rams and the Packers are both on the upswing. They have the potential to be better than they even were last year. But you look at the transitions that are happening in Philadelphia, what Dallas has done this offseason, which I would love an explanation from any single human being who has an understanding of what's going on over there. And the NFC South is right there. So, you know, if you can get to a place where you're arguably the third, fourth best team in the entire conference, even if you're not a contender in most other seasons, I don't think that that's that big of a jump for this Falcons team. And that's the story that they're probably telling themselves right now and were when they decided to make the Cousins move.
All right, Robert. Well, that's all we got. I appreciate you for doing this, man. These were, like I said, three super fun, three similar but different enough teams to talk about. And I think we did it from every single angle. Appreciate your time, buddy. Tell the people what you got working on right now leading up to the NFL draft.
The Athletic Football Show, 3 days a week, and Football GM with Mike Sando and Randy Mueller on Saturdays. So we've got tons of draft content coming your way on Tuesday, Thursday, Friday. We just changed the schedule, so I'm still figuring it out. Tuesday, Thursday, Friday for the next however many weeks until the NFL draft. And then we have a live draft show that we're doing on nights 1 and 2 of the draft from Detroit. Me, Dane Brugler, Nate Tice reacting to every single pick in real time. So if that's the way you potentially want to spend your draft night, We would really appreciate that. But we're available wherever you get your podcasts.
Boom. Well, hey, Robert knows I love their show. They crush it over there. So definitely make sure you're subscribed. You're listening to that. In the meantime, you listen to this show. You subscribe to this show. That's going to do it for this particular episode. But we are back on Thursday with Charles McDonald to preview and review part one of the wide receiver class. Yeah, this is such a good class. We're splitting it into two episodes. We're going to talk about the top of the class on the next episode with Charles. Until then, we're out.